is the Financial Exchange with Barry Armstrong and Chuck Zada. Your exclusive look at business and financial news affecting your day, your city, your world. Stay informed and up to date about economic and market trends. Plus, get breaking business news every day. And now, the Financial Exchange with Barry Armstrong and Chuck Zada.
I can't imagine that there is anybody more concerned about the potential meat shortages than Chuck Zada yesterday, but it sounds like we don't have too much to fear in terms of meat shortages, do we, Chuck?
This
Good
is
morning,
why
everybody, by the way. It's Barry and Chuck with you here.
This is why I make my own sausage.
Yeah, I'll bet you do.
Just for this
do you use
reason.
Deer meat? Do you use deer meat for your sausage?
Pork.
Pork, okay.
Yep.
Mix it in with a little venison. You'll like it.
I feel like that might get a little dry.
Well, the pork makes up for it, though.
Yeah.
You know, and do it proportionally based on, you know, you might decide, well, it's got to be 70% pork and 30% venison, but the venison gives it great flavor.
I got to talk to my meat guy then. I got a guy in the north end that hooks me up with my meat. So I'll talk to him about a little venison. I'll see what I can
but
do.
But yet another hacking attack. And you know, it's one thing if they hack our oil, right? You hack our oil, hack our money. Don't hack our meat.
Yeah, this hits a little close to home, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's So this is the second big ransomware attack on. I'll call this infrastructure, on effectively infrastructure. I mean, it's food infrastructure when you're talking about meat processing plants and being able to get food out to your population. So the meatpacker JBS, they were hit by a ransomware attack that, if you looked at the data from the last couple days, took about 20% of U.S. Meat processing offline for a couple days here. They said they're making pretty good progress on getting things spooled back up, so it shouldn't be too much longer. But this is something that, again, we've seen these attacks in the past on, you see a lot of them on municipalities where, you know, a town in a whatever state it is gets hit by this and they have to pay the attackers a couple $1 million in order to get access back to their systems and things like that. Those things have happened. We haven't seen as much with big, large scale publicly known companies in critical infrastructure until these last couple here. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's challenging on these, and we don't know just because we haven't seen, you know, any reporting on exactly what happened with this attack on JBS. But generally, when you look at how most of these attacks are conducted, they're not using any kind of incredibly sophisticated hacking where they broke through 8 firewalls and did a loop-de-loop and a double Irish and this and that and everything, you know, and finally they got into the system. Most of the time, it's, you know, they send out a million emails to people in an organization and it says, hey, check out, you know, these great muffins that I got at this place, or hey, if you click this, you could win millions of dollars. And one person, whether they're naive, dumb, or just not thinking, clicks it. And it grants the attackers access to the system without them having to do anything complicated.
That's all it takes, huh?
That's all it takes. And, you know, the problem is people say, well, you should fire the person who is, you know, responsible for this. Well, sometimes it's the CEO of places or the mayor of places that clicks on these. And you can't just go and fire that. It's kind of an important person. It's not always some low-level grunt that this happens to. So it's a really difficult thing to get around because – or to deal with just because – again, they're sending these emails out to millions of people. You could have 99.9% compliance, and if just 5 people across the globe click on these things that they shouldn't click on, you got 5 potential huge vulnerabilities.
Here's the question that I think a lot of investors have.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, are these orchestrated by, are these military operations on the part of maybe North Korea, China, Russia, or are these clandestine individuals that are just doing this, you know, on their own? Because the feel of it is almost like it's a military operation.
Well, I'm not qualified to speak on this at all, so I'm not going to.
All right. It keeps happening, right? It was the oil company. It was the pipeline last week.
Can I add one more ransomware attack that broke an hour ago? I don't know if you guys saw this.
No.
Locally, the Steamship Authority, which runs the ferry service to Martha's Vineyard in Nantucket, announced this morning that they have been hit with a ransomware cyber attack, and the customers traveling on Wednesday may experience delays.
They're going to have to hop on Southern Airways Express instead.
That's what they should be doing anyway.
There you go. Just saying.
Well, you just, you know, the JBS is already through it. You know, it's they're going to be fine, but it's amazing. Hey, earlier in the show, we've reported on AMC, and their stock is even up more now. But we did see that the company itself sold $230 million of their stock to a hedge fund.
Yes, they did. Sorry, I'm pulling the story back up.
Yeah, since we talked about it.
Since we covered it.
Well, the 230 we didn't cover, right?
We did.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's move on to Zoom then.
All right.
Yes.
Zoom having an awesome quarter and suggesting that they're going to double again in terms of their revenue. I don't, like, is that overly optimistic? I mean, aren't people sick of using Zoom at this point?
Well, they may be sick of using Zoom, but remember that Zoom does not get paid by the minute. Zoom gets paid by the license.
Oh.
And here's the thing that I've thought about is, at least in our company, it might not be that we are having as many Zoom meetings this year as we were last year,
right,
but it still is an option that some people like to have available just to, you know, avoid travel in certain cases, mm-hmm, or just to be able to hop on for a quick meeting where you can talk to someone without having to have, you know, a big to-do, or you can at least see a person and not do a phone call. So it might have been a case where, hey, I might have been personally using Zoom 4 or 5 hours a day last year. Maybe that goes down to 4 or 5 hours a week this year, but I still need the license in order to use those 4 to 5 hours a week, and so Zoom isn't losing any revenue from me, even though my usage is down.
Okay, so they can they're and they have become somewhat of a household name, haven't they?
Oh, they. I mean, do you ever call someone up and say, "Hey, I'm going to WebEx you," or "I'm going to GoToMeeting you"? They look at you and be like, "I don't want you to GoToMeeting me."
Right,
I don't want
you
to do that. That doesn't sound fun. It's no
Zoom. Zoom became the dominant player during the pandemic. That's a company that benefited tremendously from the pandemic.
The only other one that I think has brand name recognition, Tucker, I'm curious to get your opinion on this. The only other one that I think has brand name recognition is FaceTime.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. I would agree with that.
You know, I don't think anyone ever. What's Google's even called?
Google Hang.
Is it?
Hangout. Yep, Google Hangout.
You ever
it's
hear anyone say, I'm going to Google Hang you?
Nope.
No.
I don't want to be Google Hung.
Yeah.
No, I don't either.
Google Hanged?
Google Hanged.
Google Hanged.
Too late to get into the stock?
Which one?
Zoom?
Yes, it is. The best time was obviously 15 months ago. It's not going to have, you know, a run like it's been on. Does that mean that, you know, it's going to head down from here? Couldn't tell you, but certainly, yes, the opportunity is always before anyone knows about a company, not after the whole world is using them as a verb.
Right. TSA numbers over the weekend. I don't know if you guys caught these or not. I think it was 7 million Americans going through TSA over Memorial Day weekend. Now, granted, it was a holiday weekend, but still, that, you know, you think about where we were a year ago, it seems like travelers, personal travelers are back, and even the business travelers are starting to come back, Chuck.
Yeah, you had a couple days where we were north of 80% of 2019 traveler numbers. And by the way, this was, you talk about the bottom for the travel industry, and it was April and May last year. Just as a point of comparison, last Memorial Day weekend, here are the traveler numbers. 353,000, 352,000, 268,000, 327. That's from Friday through Monday of last Memorial Day. So just over 1 million people total. Then, as you mentioned, you come to this year, over 7 million people traveling. So, you know, up sevenfold from last year, still below the 2019 numbers a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very clear to me that a ton of people want to travel. A ton of people are traveling. They have the means to travel as well. And despite all the additional travel that we have, I mean, we have not seen a day with below 1 million people in a TSA checkpoint since March 10th. Okay,
wow.
So it's been almost 3 full months now that we've had a million plus people going through checkpoints every single day. And because of the vaccination rates that we have,
mm-hmm,
you're not seeing any increase in cases. Could they be declining faster? Yeah, they probably could be, but you're not seeing a resurgence of any kind of COVID epidemic because of all this travel and, you know, mingling across different parts of the country, it's not causing any uptick in cases nationally. So to this point, I don't think there's anything to suggest that this abates. And as long as airlines can get their planes back in the air and hire up their staffs again and bring them back from furloughs, I don't see anything stopping this growth from continuing.
Well, their suggestion is that you could see 80% of the business travelers back by the end of this year.
I don't buy that.
You don't?
No. Mm-hmm. I don't buy it, and here's why. Okay. It depends how they look at it. They might get 80% of the business travelers back. I don't think they're going to get 80% of the business volume back. And what I mean,
because you think people are going to just say, well, I don't have to go out to California. I could do that one meeting via Zoom rather than spending $5,000 to go out to California for the week.
Yeah, I think the guy that used to have to go out to visit, you know, the plant in wherever, you know, four times a month was going out once a week.
Yep.
Might go out once every 2 weeks or once every four because some of it can be done virtually now.
Right. That makes sense. Hey, folks, we will be playing trivia in the next segment. Stay with us. Trivia next on the Financial Exchange.
This is your home for the latest business and financial news in New England and around the country. This is the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Life estates are not simple documents. There are many pitfalls in using them, from hidden gift issues to income tax consequences to the potential for a loss of control of your estate. On the other hand, irrevocable trusts provide specific protections that many families are interested in, such as keeping your assets out of probate and potentially avoiding estate taxes. If you haven't done your planning yet, now's the time to learn the difference between a trust and a life estate. Cushing and Dolan are experts in estate planning and taxation, and their new guide out for June, called The Difference Between Life Estates and Irrevocable Trusts, will educate you on both products and give you clear guidance as to which one makes the most sense for your estate plan. Don't leave your assets to chance. Call 866-848-5699 and get your free guide today. Cushing and Dolan have been helping New England families for more than 30 years. Let them help you too. That's 866-848-5699. Or download the guide right now on their website, LegalExchangeShow.com. That's LegalExchangeShow.com. The Financial Exchange is live on Facebook, so make sure to like our page and watch the guys break down the latest on the markets every day beginning at 10 on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Trivia is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. Flights to Nantucket resume. Well, they've already resumed. With a brand new schedule from Hanscom Field, take the easy route to Nantucket. Fly Southern Airways Express from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, and now Hanscom Field off of Route 128. Fast flights, low fares, book today at iFlySouthern.com. This week in 1937, Hollywood icon Morgan Freeman was born in Memphis, Tennessee. We'll be asking a trivia question about Morgan Freeman. The only Oscar Morgan Freeman has ever won was the Best Supporting Actor Award for his performance in what movie? Well, I know what movie a lot of you are going to guess. The only Oscar that Morgan Freeman has ever won was the Best Supporting Actor and Award for his performance in what movie? If you know the answer to that, text your name and the keyword I fly to 63566. That's your first and last name and the keyword I fly to 63566. The 11th correct answer will win a $50 gas card and be automatically registered to win a pair of round trip tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express. We'll give away those tickets on Friday's program. Chuck, let's talk about the real estate market. I saw a headline in the Wall Street or in CNBC this morning that, well, the housing boom may be cooling as weekly mortgage demand has dropped once again.
Not buying it. I think that this headline and interpretation here from CNBC is not accurate. What we're seeing here is that applications to purchase a home were down 3% and were 2% lower than the same week a year ago. I think this continues to be a case of tight inventory being the story more than anything else. I have updated inventory numbers. Mike Simonson, who is just a fantastic follow on Twitter for anything housing related. Any guess, Barry, as to how many homes are on the market currently throughout the United States?
Well, less than there were a year ago. How's that?
Give me a guess.
Oh, I don't know. 1.5 million.
326,000.
That's it.
Do you know how many were on the market a year ago?
About 600,000.
729. So we're still less than half. Not only that, here are the prior 4 years. So 16, 17, 18, and 19 at this point.
Okay.
1,016, 949, 879, and 915. We're running at a third of normal inventory levels. Okay.
How much do you attribute of that to the inability to foreclose on the people that are not making their mortgage payments?
None. I've moved away from that completely. I don't think it's a factor at all. Those numbers, Chuck?
Those numbers are daunting. There's like, isn't it like 2 or 3 million homes that are in forbearance?
It's down below 2 million now. It's dropping by about 350,000 a month.
You know the reason it's dropping by 350 a month.
Yeah, most of them are coming off with no problems. I think it's a complete non-factor.
Wow. Wow.
I think if they had been allowed to foreclose previously, that could have gotten some supply on. But at this point, most of them are coming off with no problems.
What do you mean? The people are selling them? Because they probably can. If you're in forbearance, let's say you have a home and it's worth 400 grand, right? And you're in forbearance and they're about to foreclose on you. Well, you just sell the damn thing for 500,000.
No, they're either being sold or they are able to make payments. It's I think it is a complete non-factor at this point. It was something that I was watching over the winter. I don't think it matters because, again, even if you get 1.8 million homes, okay, that are foreclosed on, they don't all hit the market at once.
Yeah.
You know, so we're at 326 right now. We've seen a slight uptick, okay? We bottomed around 315, so inventories are coming up slightly. Mm-hmm. But normally you see inventories rally from about 700,000 to close to 1 million over the course of the spring into the summer. We're just not anywhere near that, obviously.
We never got the surge in listings, did we, in the spring? We had,
you have gotten a surge. So what we've seen here is back in January, we were seeing about 25,000 listings a week. We're seeing about 75,000 listings a week now. So we've tripled. We're seeing good numbers coming on the market.
But they're going fast.
A third of them are sold within 3 days.
Yeah.
And that's the real issue, is just so much comes off quickly. Other pieces that we are seeing, normally at this point in the year, we'd be 12 to 15 weeks into rising inventories. Mm-hmm. So inventories usually start to rise sometime mid to late February. We've only seen 3 weeks in a row of rising inventory now.
So is there any indication that this thing's going to cool down?
No.
Any indicators that you monitor and have monitored historically that say to you, okay, yes, the market's hot, but 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, there's going to be a lot more inventory available.
When you say cool down, do you mean level off or drop in price?
Real estate doesn't drop in price that often. Like, it takes usually a banking crisis or a lending crisis to have it go down in value, right? Or massive unemployment. Let's just go with a leveling off.
No.
Wow. You might be right, because the labor shortages, you talk to contractors and builders. Holy cow. These guys are pulling their hair out. They've got back orders on homes they want to build, and first of all, they have problems with supplies, right? Lumber, components that go into the construction of the home. And then on top of all that, they can't find anybody to work for less than $40 an hour.
Yeah, and what we've seen is that normally in a time of rising prices, a lot of builders will be saying, hey, let's get more shovels in the ground because we can make a killing right now. We can get all this, we can build new inventory. They're pulling shovels out because they don't have controls on what their lumber is going to cost, when they can get appliances delivered, when they can get windows and doors delivered. So normally you'd say, okay, this will abate because you'll have additional construction. And it's true. Construction's ticked up from where it was. But you would expect if prices kept moving like this, that you would get to an annualized pace of more than 2 million homes being built. It seems like we're kind of plateauing around 1.5 to 1.7 million right now. And until we see construction moving faster than that, it's hard to see this bottleneck being cleared at any point soon. So I think there's at least 12 to 18 months left in housing, just because that's as far as I'll go out. But there's nothing to suggest any kind of issues in the housing market until at least the end of 2022 in my book. Unless, if the Fed decided next year, hey, we're going to raise rates unexpectedly. Yeah, that could cause, some shifting in pricing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, when Jay Powell says he wants to keep rates low, if there's one thing that you should trust the Fed on, they always want to keep rates low. They've proven it time and time again. We all thought they were raising for the last decade, and they never did.
Easy money and low rates.
They like easy money.
Well, it's the world we live in, you know, and the problem is, Chuck, a lot of us were trained under the old dynamics, right? You know, rising interest rates and you didn't have this type of Fed intervention. It's a brave new world out there, and I think we all need to get used to it. Hey, coming up, we'll have the answer to our trivia question, and we'll have a conversation about tapping your home equity as the markets are rising.
The Financial Exchange is live on Facebook, so make sure to like our page and watch the guys break down the latest on the markets every day beginning at 10 on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. If the Wall Street roller coaster has you scratching your head, check out our brand new podcast, Dumb Questions for Smart Money, an easy way to gain some knowledge about the latest trends in the business and financial industry without the brain pain that comes with it. Listen and learn to Dumb Questions for Smart Money. Subscribe today on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps.
Million Dollar Baby. To the surprise of many movie fans, Morgan Freeman has been awarded just one Oscar award in his illustrious acting career, and it was for his supporting role in the 2005 film Million Dollar Baby. Freeman has amassed a total of 5 Oscar nominations, including 3 for Best Actor.
And the winner on this question was Mark from Georgetown, Massachusetts. So Mark is taking home a $50 gas card and also is entered to win the pair of round-trip tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express. We'll give those away on Friday's show. Trivia today is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. Flights to Nantucket are now available with a brand-new schedule from Hanscom Field. You can take the easy route to Nantucket, fly Southern Airways Express from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, now Hanscom Field off 128. Fast flights, low fares, book today at iFlySouthern.com.
So, Chuck, in the last 3-4 years, how much have housing prices increased in the New England region? Is it safe to say 20-30%?
Yeah.
I would think that's a number. It depends on where you live, obviously, but on the whole, in New England, you've probably seen your real estate values increase by 20-30%. Some of you will say, "Oh no, I've done much better than that," and some will say, "No, mine hasn't gone up that much." But on the whole, call it 20-30%. And as a result, you're seeing a lot of people saying, "Maybe I'll tap into my home equity. Interest rates are low, and I want to do some expansion, or I've got some other bills that I want to pay." Let's talk about what homeowners should be considering when they're tapping into their home equity, or when they hear that their neighbor has tapped into their home equity. And hopefully we can help people do it the right way.
Yeah, I think number one is to consider the reason why you're talking about tapping into your home equity. And remember, your home is, generally at least, okay, an asset that at least holds its value, maybe appreciates. Okay, it's something that... Mm-hmm. In general, when you look at long periods of time, you know, holding a home for 10 to 15 years, you would expect to have a slightly positive return after inflation. Interestingly enough, if you look at houses, the average return, you know, after inflation, typically only about 2 to 3% historically over the last 50 years. So it's only
recently. Makes the last year really unusual, doesn't it?
It does.
You know, to see, but you got to remember, there were years that it didn't go up at all, right? Yep. There were years that when it went down, but the last year, I'd say New England, you know, depending again where you are, it could be 15-20% just in 12 months.
Yep, absolutely. So I think that when you're looking at what to use home equity for, number one, don't use it for depreciating assets. I think that's the strongest advice that I can give.
Cars, vacations,
don't go
like
buy
that.
A boat. Don't go buy a car. Vacation isn't even an asset. Doesn't right. even exist. You spend that money. It's complete. It's not even providing you any utility. So
can I throw one more thing in there that you didn't mention?
Yeah.
Stocks.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of people. I've seen it happen before. I saw it happen. I'm dating myself here, but back in the 90s, I remember people that would cash out their house in terms of you know, refinancing it, and they were buying dot-com stocks in late 99 and in early 2000, and guess how that ended? Not well.
Yeah, don't put your ability to have a roof over your head in jeopardy because you want to go buy risk assets. Now, if you have, you know, a rental property that you rent out where you're already taking investment risk there or something like that, at least there you say, okay, I'm trading one type of risk for another. But if you're talking about your primary residence, it's not really an area where you want to be jeopardizing your ability to have a roof over your head if the market collapses. It's it's just not something that you want to be taking on. It's a huge additional risk. I think there are ways to constructively use, you know, home equity. One of the things that I've used it for in recent years, put solar panels on my house.
Okay.
It's something that A, adds net value to the house, B, it's going to improve my cash flow over time. And so it's taking, you know, this asset that I have and actually improving it to the point where it's going to provide even more financial value. So, you know, something like that for me made sense. Certain improvements, okay? If you're trying to get a home ready to sell and, you know, you need to do a couple things, there are lists out there about the highest value home improvements you can find. Interestingly enough, one that always gets cited that no one thinks about, garage doors. Good looking garage doors people like for some reason. Don't know why. But those are the kinds of things that can make sense for home equity lines. Is, you know, generally, again, using it on something that improves either the functionality or the value of the property that you're using there. I think those are really, you know,
so
good
what's the
to
more
consider.
Efficient way to do it though, Chuck? You know, is it better to just refinance, like do a cash out refinance, or are you better off using a home equity line of credit?
I think it depends on where your rates are, because cash out refinances do typically come with slightly higher rates attached to them. And so if it's something where maybe you nailed the bottom of the rate cycle last year and you've got a 30-year like 2.75%, and if you wanted to do a cash out refi now, you'd be bumping up to 3.25%. You say, look, I want to keep that, you know, I want to keep that great rate that I have because I like being locked in at 2.75 for 30 years. Then maybe you look at, you know, a home equity line of credit or a home equity loan that, yeah, it might still have that 3.25% interest rate, but you keep the low one on your primary mortgage. So it's going to be dependent on the mortgage rate that you have. If you've got, you know, a mortgage rate that you still haven't refied, you're at 4% and you're thinking about doing a cash out refi and you can still get down to 3.25%. Then maybe you do the cash out refi and get down to 3.25% instead. But, you know, you also have to look at your cash flow. Does that bump up your payment in any way? There's a whole bunch to look at there in terms of specific situations. But either one can be a good option if you're looking to use it. But I think I can't say strongly enough, don't buy freaking boats with your home equity loan.
Well, and that's the problem with the home equity line of credit. You know, you go and, you know, because the banks hand them out like candy. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And you go and you get a $100,000 home equity line of credit. And people think that they treat it like they've got money in their savings account. And it's not a savings account. It's a spending account. And I, darn it, I've seen people really just, you know, fritter away the money in ways that they later regret.
And if you do disregard that advice and you do buy a boat with your home equity line of credit, you better name it Levered Up or something along those lines that at least acknowledges that you shouldn't be doing it.
You're bad.
At least acknowledge the fact that you shouldn't have done it to begin with.
Well,
so that's where I stand on it.
All right. Basically two ways, right, to get the money out of your house. Cash out refinance, home equity line of credit.
Yep, and both are up right now. Again, you had, I think it was close to $50 billion in home equity that was cashed out in Q1 of this year. Highest level on record since the financial crisis. So you get, you know, people that say, oh, well, this makes me nervous. But overall, again, the equity lines, you said they're giving them out like candy. It still isn't like what it was in the 2003 to 2006 range. That was a
no,
whole...
No, I'll grant you that. That's for sure.
Whole different level of irresponsibility that we saw back then. Let's talk a little bit about the latest guide from the Armstrong Advisory Group. This is brand spanking new. It came out just yesterday. It's titled Building an Income Distribution Strategy. And the thesis behind this guide is answering the question of, hey, when I retire, which accounts do I pull from first? We get this question an awful lot. How do I be as tax efficient as possible? Do I consider Roth IRA conversions? I've got a pension. Which option should I take? And do I defer taking money out of my 401k or my IRA? All kinds of questions that we get. You know, Social Security. How do I mesh that with, you know, pulling money from my accounts? These are all really important questions because as you're trying to build a retirement plan, efficiency is really important. When we're talking about efficiency, we're largely talking about taxes and trying to minimize that tax burden. There are a ton of different strategies that you can implement in order to minimize that burden, but you have to build the one that's right for you. So we built this guide, or we wrote this guide, titled Building an Income Distribution Strategy. It goes through all the things you need to consider when determining which accounts to pull money from at what time. How do I pay for, maybe I do have a need to buy a car or put, you know, a new roof on the house. How do I go about figuring these things out? This is the guide for you. It's titled Building an Income Distribution Strategy, and there are two ways to get it. Number one, call 800-393-4001, and you can request the guide over the phone, or go to armstrongadvisory.com, click the monthly guide button, and you can download it right now. It doesn't cost you a dime. The guide, once again, is titled Building an Income Distribution Strategy, and it's available at 800-393-4001, or by going to armstrongadvisory.com.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Securities America and its representatives do not provide tax advice. Therefore, it is important to coordinate with your tax advisor regarding your specific situation. Charles Zotta, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.
OPEC Plus has agreed to add production as oil prices climb. I was actually, you know, we used to kid about OPEC all the time. Remember, because they would stab each other in the back and lie, cheat, and steal about their oil production. They actually kind of held the line pretty well this last go-around, didn't they?
They did. And I think it's something where they probably all realized the uniqueness and the severity of the situation that they were in. And I think that that probably contributed to them, you know, holding the line on this. So, yeah, OPEC Plus is estimated to agreeing to add an estimated 350,000 barrels per day in June and 441,000 barrels per day in July. Mm-hmm. And Saudi Arabia also going to be unwinding some voluntary cuts of up to 1 million barrels a day that they had announced earlier this year. And so, again, when all is said and done, probably close to, you know, 700 to 800,000 barrels a day starting to come online in the next couple months. But demand is robust. I mean, did you see any traffic over the weekend, anyone?
Well, it was so darn rainy. I know. I'll tell you what, there was no boat traffic, you know.
No, that is what you can. There was not a whole lot of demand for boat fuel over the weekend. But yeah, I mean, it's just something where I was talking to someone earlier today, and morning traffic is back to normal for the workday.
Is it?
It's no different from what it was. The days of everyone's sitting at home on Zoom. No one's over. Done.
Amazing how quickly it happened, isn't it?
It's someone flicked a switch in the last 3 weeks, and it's completely changed.
I'm going to revert to all of our old bad habits, right?
And I'm going to start eating cheeseburgers for breakfast again.
All right. Hey, when we come back, we're going to be talking about the first American-made ship for offshore wind farm construction and good news for New England, particularly for those of you in the New London, Connecticut region. That's next on the Financial Exchange.
Business and financial news affecting the markets and your wallet. We got it all straight from Wall Street, right here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Hi, this is Mike Armstrong, and I know that many of you listening today may be retired or getting ready to retire. Having the right retirement income strategy is paramount to being able to live the way you want without the worry of running out of money in your later years. Understanding tax consequences should also be a major part of your plan. What happens if you get pushed into a higher tax bracket as a result of an inheritance or business sale? With rules changing regarding required distributions from traditional IRAs, you might want to consider exploring a Roth conversion so you'll be able to keep more of that money. Our new free guide available now called Building an Income Distribution Strategy outlines these and other tax-related issues in great detail. Call us at 800-393-4001 and get your free copy today. Let us explain how taxes can have a significant effect on your income strategy if you aren't prepared. Again, 800-393-4001 or download the guide right now at armstrongadvisory.com.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Securities America and its representatives do not provide tax advice. Therefore, it is important to coordinate with your tax advisor regarding your specific situation. Michael Armstrong, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.
Business news, financial news, and what it means to you on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
This segment of the Financial Exchange is brought to you in part by Southern Airways Express, now with flights from Hanscom Field off 95. If you live north or west of Boston or in southern New Hampshire or Maine, Hanscom Field is the hassle-free way for you to get to Nantucket. Southern Airways Express, fast flights, low fares, book today at iFlySouthern.com. I actually had a dream. I was on one of those planes earlier this week.
Ooh.
I did. True story. It's great.
Let's talk about wind power. It's coming, right? There are people that are going to protest it.
It has been windy this week.
Well, and we could have been creating a lot more electricity if that wind farm had been up and running in Martha's Vineyard or off Martha's Vineyard. But it's coming. And I didn't know this, but there's a federal law that says you want to plant one of those wind farms, you want to transport one of those wind farms or turbines, that shipment needs to be made in the United States.
Yeah, it's, I mean, what was it, the Jones Act that has a lot of things, pieces in it related to transporting anything around the U.S. via ship. But you have this, the first ever U.S.-built ship specifically designed for offshore wind farm construction. It was built for $500 million in a Texas shipyard. It's being commissioned for Eversource Energy and a Danish company by the name of Ørsted, who are going to be using it. And it's expected to be ready by the end of 2023. It's named after a Greek sea monster, which I think is just fantastic. And this is going to be used to, again, start construction on the first real offshore wind farms of any significant size in the United States that are planning to start construction in the next couple of years here. And these are pretty meaningful projects that we're talking about. We're not talking about what was the one off of? Was it Block Island that had like that 8-turbine one that was really small, I think?
Yep.
They had that one. That, you know, it doesn't provide a ton of power, but the latest ones that they have been talking about and that are now, you know, just about approved. I think actually the first one got approval maybe a week and a half ago, but it's a $2.8 billion project known as Vineyard Wind. It's going to be 62 turbines, just these massive ones from, I think General Electric is building them. And this is going to be, again, just a monster project that produces enough power to power 400,000 homes every year. That power is going to be largely diverted to or directed to the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah, it appears like we're poised for this to really take off, and the cost keeps coming down. And you know, there's a lot of criticism towards the wind farms, especially when they put them on land. But you know, the cost is coming down, the efficiency is getting better. We're getting better at it, and it seems like it is part of our future. We're going to be using wind farms, and at least up and down the East Coast.
Yeah, it's going to be. I think when you look offshore, again, just the economics of it have started to make an awful lot of sense. And again, you can place these far enough offshore that, yeah, you might see a little bit of these things from the land. But you remember the Cape Wind project that the Kennedys killed because they didn't want to see the things from the Cape?
Yep.
You sit there and you're like, look, ultimately, you can't have everything. So you pick, you know, what makes sense, and you pick, you know, what has the greatest number of positives and the fewest negatives. And I think offshore wind is hugely promising, especially for the New England region, because we know we're not going to be able to build additional pipeline capacity to get more nat gas and stuff up here.
Right.
That is a non-starter politically. And so if that's the case, hey, build offshore. You don't have to be, you know, dealing with communities routing, you know, gas pipelines through them and all the headaches that go with that. This, pop them offshore, you're good to go. That's your solution for New England, I think.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we need something, because to your point, you look at the risks associated with bringing that natural gas tanker into Boston Harbor, right?
Yep.
Every time you see that darn thing, you say to yourself, oh, boy. Have you ever looked at the detailed blast plan?
Yeah, it goes out to, like, Newton.
Yeah. Yeah. It's scary. It's absolutely frightening. So, you look at that. Do you think wind will overtake solar?
It's already bigger than solar.
Yeah, but in terms of like the being readily adaptable, do you think we end up with wind turbines on our homes and things like that, or no?
I don't know. I don't want to be walking around with like a beanie on my head to try to produce power.
I live on the water, and I'm trying to think, like, if you had smaller ones, that's the big gripe against them, right? Is it when they're next to your home, they create a vibration and a lot of noise?
I don't know. Maybe it puts me to sleep like a jet engine.
Does, huh? All right. Hey, the markets are open. Let's take a quick peek before we sign off. The overall, the market had been in positive territory all morning long. Right now, the Dow's up 85 points. The S&P is up 13. NASDAQ up 36 points. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow right here on the Financial Exchange.